Hello and welcome to Cooking Your Way Through Life.
Today's episode is Cooking Your Way Through Failure. And today's topic is going over the four common things that we fail at in the kitchen.
Cooking Your Way Through Life is a podcast combining knowledge of the kitchen and applying it to real life situations. This podcast is all about understanding techniques to make things you already know even better. Topics from traveling on a budget, setting and achieving short and long-term goals, and of course, cooking.
On today's episode, we're going to dive into the idea of, is failure better than succeeding when it comes to learning a lesson? Going to dive into some of my personal failures, also some of my co-host's personal failures, and we're also going to teach you how to fix or maybe not fail at some of the most common things that we fail at in the kitchen. So, get ready.
Please welcome Chef Hollywood.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Cooking Your Way Through Life with me, Chef Hollywood. And today I am joined by my friend Grant, who is, I would say, a jack of all trades, but I feel like that diminishes people when I say that. So I just like to say he just has a lot of different skill sets that he uses. So everything from being a radio host to most recently the most amazing cruise director, pretty much film, TV, stand-up comedian. So yeah, so introduce yourself, Grant. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. You know, it's funny. I never actually take jack of all trades as an insult. I've been called a jack of all trades and a master of none. And I appreciate that because I like being multifaceted. So I have done multiple things. I have a very colorful resume. But no, I am on such a high right now. Last night I got some amazing news.
Nice.
I was sitting minding my business and finally my visa came in to go to Australia. I'm going to move to Australia. So I'm in Scotland right now and I'm going to be flying to Australia, Melbourne, Australia for a year.
Awesome. That is very interesting because Melbourne is somewhere that I might end up not in the next year, but you might be leaving as I'm arriving. So that's
That has been our friendship. It's been timing like crazy.
It's like something I'm working on in the background right now, but it might actually work out. But it won't. I know it won't be within the year. It'll probably be like right. We might get a month or two. Like it might be like a little crossover there. Yeah. All right. Well, today's episode is all about failure for you guys. You heard that in the intro, but also today I'm gonna tackle what I would say are four of the things that most home cooks and even professional chefs fail at in the kitchen and kind of go through ways we can fix them. And sometimes you don't have to fix it and just understand that failure doesn't mean the end all be all. So we're going to tackle some of those points today and get into some failure and how it has made me and Grant grow in different ways. So I know for me and I know for you, so can share those thoughts with you guys today. So without further ado, getting into the biggest topic, because, you know, we start off very deep on this show and then get into the silly stuff later. So jumping into the deep end of the pool, I would say, Grant, when it comes to failure, because I'm a very big self-aware person. Everybody listens to podcasts and I was like, I even cut somebody off because they were not self-aware. What would you say is your biggest failure to date and what did you learn from it?
Yeah, so first of all, when you were saying, listen, this is the topic, we're going to be talking about failure, I was so excited to do it. Because if anything, I don't believe in failure. And what I mean is, I actually don't see failure kind of in the same mindset that regular people see it. Mm. If I was to be like critical, you know, like put that ego hat on and say, look, this was a failure, I think I would have two. One would definitely be losing a career. And do you know what? It was purely just because of immaturity and I hadn't honed the skills to, you know, adjust my attitude and keeping thoughts in my head.
Intrusive thoughts win sometimes.
Not even intrusive thoughts. It's because I had this ego and arrogance that I thought that my opinion needed to be heard. Like people need to hear this. And one huge failure, there is two I'm going to talk about, but one huge failure was when I lost a job at Disney. So my first ever cruise line job was on Disney. And automatically, when I got the job, I thought it was better than other people. It's like, I'm working for the mouse. You know what I mean? Little Grant from Aberdeen, Scotland. He's not working for Disney, you know? So I had applied for a kid counselor, like youth staff, not knowing that there were other jobs on the cruise line best suited for me. So instead of being happy for what I had in that moment, I came on the ship and went, wow, there's this role? Oh, I want that. No, wait a minute. No, there's this role. I want this. And through my time on the ship, I was transferred to the character host role. So I was basically performing with the characters around the ship. And then I was transferred over to the entertainment team. And there is, and I know a lot of people would agree that have worked for maybe Disney Cruise Line, there is a hierarchy. On other cruise lines, not so much. You know, like if you're, for example, on a cruise line where you have sports staff, youth staff, and activity staff, they are all on the same rung of the ladder. Whereas I felt like on Disney, it was, if you're the activities team, you're the it people. You know what I mean? You're the pink ladies walking through the ship and people are like, wow. And so I was given this role as an entertainment activity team member, and I automatically deemed myself better than others. And right there was a failure. And that moment, I should have just been appreciative of the opportunity. And I need to say this, I was only given the role temporarily. They were like, listen, we need you to cover for 6 weeks as one of the entertainment hosts. Will you be up for it? Yeah, because my ego was like, they'll never put me down once they promote me.
Yeah.
I'm good. No. They transferred my behind back to Kids Club. And I was in a mood. I was like, honestly, I was so rude to my colleagues. Because I thought, well, I don't belong here. You know, I really don't belong here. And through my arrogance and my attitude, I was let go from Disney. I was brought in, and basically they had said, listen, this attitude and what you bring to the table, this isn't part of our standards. And it's a sad badge of honor that I hold that I was fired from Disney. And I think the other failure that I've had, and this one's actually means close to my heart, is friendships. I have lost friendships temporarily, thank goodness. Through, here we go again, arrogance, through setting up unnecessary boundaries. And I actually, during the pandemic, I think we were all reflecting life. We were all like stopping for a minute and going, and so I reached out and I just apologized and took full ownership of like, listen, this is what I did wrong. You are such a close friend, if not extended family member, and yet I was ready to throw this away like it was nothing. And I know you won't mind me saying this, that was a very recent thing for me and you, only last year, that me and you had gotten into a disagreement. I walked away, had to cool down and think about it, and I said, okay, first of all, Drake has been a ride or die. He's always been there. Let's not let our ego create a failure here that doesn't need to be failed. You know what I mean? So I remember, I think the biggest one is losing friendships. Now, I can say that I have managed to rekindle and strengthen each one of those friendships again.
Which is so amazing.
Seriously, like I could get really emotional thinking about it, but my friend James in Wales, my friend Jenny in Pennsylvania, a friend Wendy here in Scotland, I have managed to fix and repair each one of those. Now, me and you, thankfully, we never stopped talking for a long period of time, because I think we just took a week and came back and went, okay, let's not do this because this does not work out well.
Yeah. But ours was like a kerfuckle, not really like a failure.
A what?
A kerfuckle. that's what my grandma says, because she doesn't say the word correctly. So. Oh, so it's God. Like just like a little hiccup in the road. But I think those two are great though, because one, you talked about like not only your personal life but also professional life. And I think some people don't really think about personal life sometimes as a failure. I know somebody really close to me, I used to say that every relationship or situationship that doesn't work out is a failure. And like, he lets me know that like, it's not necessarily a failure, but I'm just if Ricky Bobby in certain sentences, like if you don't win, you lose. Like, it's, so I'm just like, well,
no, it was one. I have a lot of like teachers that I follow, Louise L. Hay, Shal Richardson, Marianne Williamson. And Marianne Williamson, I remember, just slapped me hard with this one. Out of every situation, stop and ask yourself, what percentage was my doing? So yeah. A lot of people have the ego and arrogance and say, well, that was all their fault. You know what I mean? It wasn't my fault. Stop and just say to yourself, okay, let's be honest. What percentage of that was my doing? And yeah. I tell you now, it just opens you up and it makes you even more self-aware.
I think that's the thing too. Like I noticed that like my close net of friends and people that I talk to probably on a daily basis are some of the most self-aware people, and they keep me self-aware because like I do take responsibility for things. Sometimes my therapist will say over responsibility for things. but I think like, cause one of my biggest failures that I feel for me was when I actually, right before something great happened. So right before I met you and going to Hall America and doing America's Test Kitchen, I took on the role of executive chef in a restaurant in Key West, and I knew I didn't want a job. Like, I knew I didn't want to do it. I was kind of doing it already. There was nobody there. But it's like one of those situations where someone just kept saying, you're so great at this. You're the best person to do this. And like, I'm listening to the outside world, not listening to me. And I did it. Hated it, stressed myself out. I was probably the most depressed I've ever been in my entire life. I was 310 pounds when I left Key West. Like,
what?
I was like in such a bad place in my life. Like, moving out of Key West.
Wow.
Like, it was like the lowest point of my life. And like, so many people around me was so happy because I was just like, you're like a chef, and this is like one of the best restaurants here. Like, it was just like, and my failure, in my opinion, was listening to the people to do something I didn't want to do. And it just took me to this dark, dark place. And getting myself out of that place, I realized, like, I never want to do that again. Like, I just never want to be in that position.
I'm going to jump in there. And I was literally on the treadmill yesterday. Look, I'm going to find it. But looking for this video of Oprah Winfrey when she's being interviewed, and she says that exact same thing, which is every failure or mistake she's ever had was because she was listening to other people.
I agree. Like, I wholeheartedly agree. Like, yeah. Which leaves us, because Miss Oprah, because that's one thing we have in common, you know, always the Oprah cruise. If you don't know, me and Grant were a part of Oprah's being a godmother for a new sign down with Holland American Line. And I mean, the only people to be able to say they went to a pajama party and had a dance off in front of Oprah while taking tequila shots.
It was so crazy. Like, literally, it was 2,600 women and 64 men. And it was Oprah and Gayle King's Girls Getaway Cruise. And it was 3 days. And obviously, it ended with Oprah christening the ship. I swear it was... It was still to this day one of the funnest things that I've ever had.
I had so much fun.
And it was hilarious that there was a pajama party, but we were told we had to be in our uniform. You're working at night, you can't be in your pajamas. I had gotten Oprah Winfrey custom made pajamas. And I was like, are you for real? The minute we were off the clock, we all changed into our pajamas. We headed straight to the BB King's club, and we just had the best time.
The best time. There are probably videos out there we don't even know about.
You can find this on YouTube, or if you Google it, Oprah literally came out with a tray of Dragos Blanco tequila.
Yes.
And literally went, you get a shot, you get a shot, yes, you get a shot. And yes. I remember watching this. My brain is blowing up like, this is happening in front of me.
In real time. In real time. No. It was so great. Like, but yeah, I mean, Oprah is also one of the people that I feel like she embodies what quote unquote failure can turn to success to me. Because a lot of people would look at what she's done on paper without her name behind it and say, mm-hmm. oh, you've been fired at this age. That's a failure. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's because of her, like you look at it differently. But that leads me into the next segment of us talking about failure. And when is a failure a sign of pivot or pushing through? Because I think some people take it and they kind of recede into themselves. And some people take it and it's like put a battery in your back. So how do you know when it's a sign to pivot or push through?
Yeah. And just to finish that piece that you were speaking about Oprah before I go into this was that I love when Leslie Jones is on Saturday Night Live and she goes through all the celebrities' ages when they first started. Mm-hmm. And she spoke about how Oprah Winfrey got fired and then they automatically came back and went, oh, of course, that was a mistake. She went, no, it wasn't, because she had to get fired to become Oprah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there was a failure to become what there is. The pivot and push, I think you push through failure when you know it's something that means something to you. You know what I mean? That failure happens and you say to yourself, okay, I need to stand up, I need to brush myself off, and I need to do it again. I have this a lot during my stand-up comedy gigs. Actually, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna poo-poo my talents here. I don't have it that much, but I've had it enough when you walk away from a show and mm-hmm. you just bombed hard. No one laughed. And if you were to stop and say, okay, maybe I should just stop comedy altogether. You know what I mean? No. That's when you have to, here we go again, listen to yourself and not other people. And firstly, just like take a moment to reflect and just say, okay, how did we fail here? Was it the energy in the room? Did I even read the room right? Mm-hmm. Was the joke even right for the demographic? Did I even get the audience on my side before I started cracking jokes? Yeah. Now, I'm going to give a little advice to anyone that wishes to become a comic. Let me tell you, I've seen comedians fail hard by going on stage and immediately making fun of the front row that the audience don't even trust you yet. And yeah. you're automatically already like, you know, like making fun of them. So I always say, get the audience on your side well before you even consider making fun of them. But focusing on comedy and presenting and emceeing, it honestly means the world to me. I love making people smile. I love yeah. making people feel happy, even content in that moment. And if I can make them laugh, that's just a bonus. And every time that I have failed, I have pushed through or pivoted because I need to make my passion work. I need to yeah. make this thing that I love with my very being work. That's what I would say. The best way to push through is just to admit, this is what I love. This is my passion.
Mm-hmm.
Because guess what? If you just say, do you know what? Maybe I should give it up. Maybe it wasn't your passion. Maybe it wasn't. So if you feel so easy to give it up, then you have to say to yourself, okay, maybe it wasn't my passion. I've had so many people over the past 6 weeks say this to me. Oh my God, you quit. You just became cruise director and you've quit. Like, how could you walk away from that? Because I knew ships wasn't my passion. Not necessarily being the cruise director, but I knew ships wasn't my passion. And I know that my passion is to MC, present, manage events, and do stand-up comedy. So that's like, okay, we're going to take this and we're going to move over here.
Yeah. I actually, we are on the same page with this, which I know some of my listeners be like, you always on the same page with your co-host. I'm like, no, not really, like not all the time, but this one's very, very close because I too think that the passion part of it has to make sense. I mentor a couple chefs and like new chefs and stuff. And one of the things I tell anybody who wants to become a chef is you have to be passionate about it. You have to love it, because this is not a career that gives you back a lot of, like, you know, things. Like, you're not going to be rich, you're not going to get the girls or the guys, like, this is a passion driven career. And I think for me it's the same thing, where if I am passionate about it and I love it, I can pivot to push through. But if I don't have that passion and I fail at something, I'm just like, oh, okay, that was cute, but it's over, you know. It's just like, it doesn't even give me that. And then the second thing I will say for me, which is like a common thread in my life, is I have to be a little scared or nervous of it too. Like, 100%. Like, if I, even when I, even as a culinary instructor now, just like being on a microphone and teaching live, or like even when I do stage work or anything I do in that part, if I'm not nervous or scared, then I know that my passion is like slowly creeping away. And one of my friends, OG, who's my producer, has been on the show, you guys know him, but like he taught me that so long ago. Like, just like I was like, you still get butterflies, bro, like, you worked with everybody. He was like, yeah, like, if I'm not nervous or scared, like a little, like, I just know that, like, I'm not really caring about it anymore. And I take that as my own temperature, my internal temperature, and that's my thermometer. I'm like, oh, okay, I got a little butterflies, I'm still in this. But if that's out, like, I know that I'm just like, yep, that's the end of that one.
Joan Rivers said that she got nervous before she did comedy, and so many people went, after all these years, she said the exact same thing. She says the minute she stops being nervous before she does it, then she won't do it. We'd be so nervous before I would host the Honeymooners game show. Some people know it as like the Mr. and Mrs., the Game of Love. Because I was entering a game show where the contestants have control. You know what I mean? Mm. Their answers, I have to take that energy and make it fun and funny for the audience. Yeah. So I would be so nervous. Now, what I will say is I never got nervous walking on the stage to introduce a show. I never got nervous before I was doing a talk. And it's not that it wasn't my passion. It's they were events that I was hosting that weren't challenging me. They weren't growing
me. Yeah.
Whereas when I do comedy, I am so nervous. I just did comedy last week, and I was so nervous before I came on. And it was such, if you don't mind, it was such an amazing full circle moment, because I actually, the comedy club had returned back to a former venue, and that was the first ever venue I performed comedy in 2017. And I was like, whoa, this is a very full circle moment right now.
That's really cool.
As I'm about to go and take this next step to Australia and start this career as a comic, that I got that chance to do a full circle moment to go on the stage, that I did my first ever joke.
That's pretty cool. Well, you know, you've been doing stand-up for a while. I haven't actually been able to see you in person or live, but I just know you're a funny person, so you know, I'm gonna see it one day.
can I actually share this? It's funny. I got told by an amazing comedian called Mark Dolan, a British guy, that comedy finds you. And he was so right, because I never in a million years wanted to be a stand-up comic. Never.
Really?
And I was working on Royal Caribbean, and on those big, huge ships, they have a comedy club. And there was a comedy host that was fired, because what he was doing was, is he was stealing the previous comedian's jokes and using them the week after. Now, he was such a dummy, because he didn't put two and two together that these comedians are recurring. So the bar staff were permanently in the comedy club, whereas every 3 weeks, the comedian that he was stealing the jokes from would come back, and the bar staff said, God, by the way, you know the host uses your jokes when you leave. And so, long story short, he got fired. Future comedians, do not steal jokes. End of story.
Yeah.
But then someone says to me, Grant, would you want to be the comedy host? And I was like, no, I'm not funny. And they turned around and said, the crap you say in this office every day, apply that. Just apply that and just introduce. And that was, I found comedy and I just got a thrill for it and I loved it. And it was a passion I just wanted to follow.
Well, I've never got bitten by the comedy bug, so it has not found me. So I've not done any stand-up. I think if I did, it'd probably be on this list that we're going to talk about with failed things with our food here. So we're going to get to maybe if I was drunk, I don't know. But we're going to get to our failed recipes or failed things here, because I did want to go over a couple. And like I said, in this episode, we're talking about failure. We're talking about kind of bouncing back from failure. But I do want to talk about these four specific things because I feel like they're the equalizers. You know, a lot of home cooks that cook like once every month, or like my grandma once every 10 years, or, you know, if you're a professional cook, like you have this whole thing where you think, oh, he does it on TV or whatever. Like they never quote unquote fail at this, but these are the simplest but easiest things to fail at. And the first one you probably know, even if you don't know, and it's scrambled eggs, guys. Like, we actually do egg tests in a lot of culinary schools because eggs are the equalizer. Scrambled eggs, the worst thing you can do is overcook them and they become rubbery. But the problem is that 90% of people overcook scrambled eggs and they don't even realize it. And they never realize it until they taste a well-cooked scrambled egg that is just fluffy and light and still has moisture. And when you taste it, it's just this aha moment, bringing it back to Oprah, where it's just like, well, what did I make? What was that? And the biggest fail of this is you cooking it too hot and too long. And that's the hot part is the part where a lot of people get caught up on, because you get impatient. Even though eggs take so little time, you turn that heat all the way up because you want the egg to be cooked so fast. But it is not going to help you. The too high heat actually makes the texture rubbery and it actually dries it out more. So you're cooking it too hot. What's happening is the outside is getting done, the inside is not. So now you have to cook it longer than what you would have to cook it if it was just medium heat. And that is what causes you to have that rubbery kind of texture and very, very dry note to it. I would say this dish teaches you patience because you need low heat. You need things like gentle stirring, knowing when to stop. If you've ever taken a culinary class with me, you know that my favorite phrase is to put down the spatula and do nothing. This is when you need to apply those things because you do need to stop. And I'll try to do like metaphors or different sayings for each of these. And I would say, like, sometimes life's like scrambled eggs, like rushing it just makes it tougher, because that's exactly what happens. If you're rushing your scrambled eggs, it just become tougher, guys. Like, do not rush it. Low heat, use butter or, you know, oil, even if you're in Europe, you know, you guys have amazing olive oil. It's actually really good in eggs. And pull it off early. Your carryover heat is literally your best friend. Your pan does not turn from a hot pan to a cold pan instantly. Your eggs are in the pan. So when you get to the point where you feel like, oh, these are about to be done within 30 to 45 seconds, which most of us have cooked more than one pan of scrambled eggs before in our life, so we know this, take it off the heat. You have enough heat in there to finish it off. And that's your best friend in that. So I think eggs are the first one, because it's like that great, I always say it teaches you humility, because I've seen professional chefs mess up eggs in real
time. Heard that Gordon Ramsay would make trainees make a scrambled egg first thing when they first enter the kitchen. I heard that.
It's so true. Like, it's not a joke. It's true. I think eggs, one of the things that I teach is soup. Because I feel like layering your flavors and things, like just learning how to do that, applies to so many different things. So eggs are definitely number one for me. The other one, or the second one I'm gonna go over, is something that I'm still working on. So see, God is still working on me too. and this is bread and cakes, or bread or cakes. So a lot of times, and I am a person who, I say this on this show so much that I probably like get me a t-shirt, I am not a pastry chef. So I am a savory chef. I respect pastry chefs so much. I just always like to say that. And with cakes and breads, it's really just about the patience level. And I'm patient, but my problem is that with cakes and bread, you can do everything right and still get it wrong. And I think that's the part of failure in general that like really irritates me, where it's just like, oh, I did everything right and it still ended up wrong. And the thing about bread and cakes kind of is a little bit with the eggs. It's the not rising a lot of times on the bread part or the cakes. I know a lot of pastry chefs will tell you, even though they've been cooking for years, they still forget baking powder, baking soda sometimes. It's just one of those quick things that you're just going through your list and you just don't put it in. Or you burn the outside and it's raw inside, which goes back to what we're talking about with the eggs, where a lot of times it goes to your temperature. You need to make sure you're on the right temperature. You're not over mixing or over, and you're not proofing it wrong. So you want to proof it right. It's really about your steps, that heat, and then just making sure that you take your time. And my problem with making bread a lot of times is that I don't take the time for that proof. I don't know why. I just get very impatient in the middle. I'm very patient in the beginning. I'm very patient in the end. But that middle part of proofing is my impatient moment. And so you do have to be patient without it all, because every step really counts. And I mean, if you ever failed at bread, you know that, and it's no going back. Everybody that knows me in the professional world know that the reason why I'm not a pastry chef is because you can't really fix things in the end, in the pastry side. If you bake a loaf of bread and you forget the baking powder or the baking soda, and it is a flat loaf of focaccia, or not even focaccia, a flat loaf of anything, it's no going back. I can't really just like add a sauce on that and, oh, Grant's gonna eat this bread.
I'm not gonna lie. Let's talk about patience here. I'm probably gonna eat that warm bread anyway.
Oh my God.
I love bread. Oh my gosh.
I think the couple tricks or the trait with bread too is stir right after dropping it in. Oh, I'm sorry, not stir. Oh God, not bread. No, trust your proofing time. Jesus, guys. Preheat fully. That's one thing too that a lot of people do not do. I've seen people read an instruction and will say, I need to preheat my oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit. Go turn the oven on 375 degrees Fahrenheit, and 5 seconds later, put whatever they were going to put into the oven. You have to wait for your oven to tell you that it's 375, 350, whatever your temperature is, because your cook time should start when you put it in the oven. And remember, if you put it in the oven and it's not at that temperature, you've already started the cooking process. And with bread, especially cakes and things like that, that really does determine how it's going to come out. And I know this is a big one for a lot of people. Get a thermometer, guys, especially when you're starting out with breads. You treat bread the same way you treat meat. You always see the recipes that tell you to go to a certain temperature internally. Well, unless you're Superman, you cannot know that temperature without putting a thermometer in. So get a thermometer for your bread, because it is going to be your best friend when it comes to getting to the right temperature, which most of your recipes tell you exactly what temperature you're looking for. So hopefully that helps you guys with two of the bigger fails that most of us professional chefs and home cooks will do and continue to do in our lives. So now this is a great segue into our next question, because as a person who is working on breads myself and I've been building my confidence in doing more breads, when you do fail at something in life, because we do have small failures, we talked about big failures earlier, but you know, sometimes you just feel like, oh, I could have did that better. When there's a failure in your life, how do you rebuild your confidence after something just doesn't work out?
Now, that's a question. Oh, one of the best compliments I ever got was from my brother, who called me the king of reinvention. Mm. And I have had, since I was 16 years old, I have had 17 different jobs. I've been fired from 4 of them. And I've either quit or, you know, like left. Now, every time that a career I was going for failed, I asked myself, here we go again. Is this the path you want? Like, or do we need to change this? I've never, for some reason, bogged myself down or been hard on myself when something didn't work out. And maybe that's when I was thankful for that ego and that arrogance in my 20s, because had I been so self-aware in my 20s, I don't think I would have survived my 20s. Now, mind you, I've actually been studying psychology, mindfulness, affirmations since I was 21, actually. But it wasn't until like about 27, 28, 29 that I really started to like take this on. So through all my failures, I've never once kind of stopped and blamed myself. Again, for that first question when we're talking about Disney, I really had to put a critical hat on just to answer that, because I didn't see it as a failure. I just picked myself up and moved on. And then I went back home to go and study to be a gym instructor. And then I didn't have the passion for it. I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
I'd wanted to be a group exercise instructor. That I love through my dance background. But I didn't want to stand there next to someone on the lat pull down machine and be like, okay, three more sets. Just like, you know, bored as hell. That wasn't for me.
Yeah.
So I went back to cruise ships. And then Royal Caribbean didn't work out. That's okay, because what happened next? Holland America Line. What happened? I met you. And pandemic, it had kicked in. And just before the pandemic, I was working for BBC Scotland. I was working as a radio host. I had my own radio show. It was called The Evening Bit with Grant Martin. That was not the theme song.
I was like, really?
But it was just a moment, because the pandemic kicked in and I lost that job, and I lost the job, and I didn't think of it as a failure. I chopped up to the pandemic. So life is, and I really want people to learn this, because I blow it all the time. I really want people to be kinder to themselves and just say, life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it.
Oh, yeah.
When you fail, you can stay in that, all right? Or you can react differently. I'm going to quote, I love a quote, Jennifer Lewis, and I love her so much. And I apologies in advance for the language, but she says, if you sit in shit too long, it stops smelling. So come the fuck out of there. And again, I apologize for my language, but it's an amazing quote. And, you know, you trust Jennifer Lewis to be that blunt, and her quote has to have a curse word in it. Otherwise, it doesn't have any impact. But I have never sat in my failures. Now, there's two sides of the coin. Sometimes I could have sat in my failure, and we should have maybe reflected a little bit and said, okay, how do we make sure that we don't repeat this again in the future? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't like to sit in crap too long. I posted a video on my Instagram saying depression can't hit a moving target. And I love that. And it was just a video of me dancing in my cabin, just thriving in that moment, because the right song came on and I just felt this joy and I wanted to feel and experience this joy. There wasn't a failure involved. I just wanted to experience joy. So I would say depression and failure can't hit a moving target. Always keep moving.
I hear that a lot. And you know, like they say, sharks always continuously swim and keep moving. I think that I'm Dory in this scenario, where like I'm the weirdo, because, and I learned this through therapy and also like later on in life, that my defense mechanism or my trauma response to failure or like being depressed is that I do keep moving. And like I immerse myself in work, I immerse myself in stuff. So I have to stop. I now have to actually make myself stop and say, wait. Because I will just like run to the next thing. I just keep going. And like it's to the point now where like my close friends will know it. And like especially Abby would hit me up and she'd be like, you just posted a lot. You just did a lot. Is everything okay?
Like, my friend James in Cardiff, Wales. James is my brother. He is my family. There's no getting away from it. He can smell it a mile away. Yeah. Either just how I'm posting, how often I'm posting, how much, and he's like, "Are you all right, babe? That's all he has to say. And he knows. And I've actually, I've had a lot of people criticize me for moving forward. And I'm sure you've had it as well. It's like, should you not really like stop for a minute? Stop for a minute and reflect. Or better yet, multitask. Reflect while you're getting yourself ready for your next chapter. But make sure that you're going down a path that is going to create something. You're not going down a path out of spite of the failure.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is too. It's like the criticism from moving forward sometimes is, I think it goes into the one size fits all rule, that like some people just think that one size is good for everything. And we're all individuals. Like a time frame is very weird to say, because if I fail at something today, you fail at something today, 36 hours is going to look different for the both of us, you know? So like, you have to figure out what works for you and not for other people.
Do you know what? And this is a chapter in a book that I'm writing. And the chapter is, nobody cares. Nobody cares, right? Now, please don't hear that as so negative. Like, wow, no one cares? All right, geez. You know what I mean? What I mean is, no one really can care in this day and age. We have got devices in our hands that are showing us multiple pictures, flashing images, people's stories. People have got kids. People have got work. People have got vacations they're taking. People have got own personal plans, right? Mm-hmm. So when you fail and someone can turn around and say, oh, wow, geez, you really botched that one. They're not actually caring that you failed. They're just opening their mouth and letting their belly rumble. You just have to kind of remember that nobody really cares. And I'm not saying no one cares about you, because of course we have lovely support systems and chosen family, extended family that care about us. But when I'm talking about, never get bogged down with other people's opinions of your quote unquote failure, because they don't really care.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I agree. It's so much stuff happening. Like it's super saturated. The world is super saturated with everything right now. And a lot of times when you're thinking that the spotlight's on you for this one particular thing of you, like, I don't know, like trying to open your store on Monday, but it ended up opening on Wednesday. Like at the end of the day, like it's not that big of a thing, like at all.
No one cares. No one cares.
Yeah. Yeah. Which leads us into our last point of today, talking about failure, a little bit about no one cares. I like that role. It's a no one cares, but it's like the lessons that you learn in failure and what failure can teach you that success can never teach you. Because you touched on this earlier about if you had done, like, you know, like if you do such great things early on, do you keep doing great things? Do you change? Or like, does failing or stopping actually is the change you need?
No, I seriously, first of all, I want to reiterate the point when I say no one cares. What people think of you is none of your business. That's what people think of you. You know what I mean? People think that they can do better than you. People think, I'm going to quote Mel Robbins, two words here, let them. You know what I mean? If people are going to have an opinion of you, let them.
Cool. Yeah.
But to ask your question, what lesson can failure teach us that success can't? Well, I actually personally think, and people might disagree, let them, success cannot teach you anything. I truly believe failure can. Now, there is going to be people that say, like, you know, success shows what hard work looks like. Absolutely. But if you succeeded at the first try of everything, then you wouldn't think it was hard work. Yeah. Life needs to be your teacher. It needs to knock you on your behind and push you to strive for what you desire. I don't want to get a lot of hate for quoting this person, but there is a J.K. Rowling quote that I live by. All right. And she said this at her Harvard University speech. It is impossible to live without failing at something, unless you live so cautiously that you might as well not have lived at all, in which case you fail by default. And
she definitely feels about it.
Yeah. Like, if you live so carefully in life that you probably didn't even live at all because you failed. You didn't try anything. I've been chastised for failing by people, by close people. I've been made fun of. I remember there was someone that was a friend of the family that said, "Can't you keep a job?" Because wow. They bumped into me in the supermarket. And they says, "What are you doing now?" I was like, "Oh, I've just left this and I'm doing this next. Can you not keep a job?" Now, here we go again. If I sat in that person's opinion of me, my gosh, I'm not gonna get anywhere in life. I mean, at least I tried. I am literally about to fly to Australia in 4 weeks' time to live for a year. Guess what? I could fail. I literally could go over there and get no work. It doesn't work out for me. Maybe the culture doesn't fit. I don't know. I genuinely could fail.
Yeah.
But at least I tried. Because otherwise, sure. I could sit here in my flat here in Scotland and get a job that doesn't align with my passions to just be safe.
Yeah.
And I could never live. So... So many people say, like, you don't stick around long enough to me. And that goes back to what we're talking about, people's opinions when you try things. But at least you're trying.
Yeah.
Which I love Latrice Royale, who I actually had a conversation with over Instagram. For those that don't know who Latrice Royale is a contestant on Miss Congeniality of RuPaul's Drag Race. And I was having like a 1 a.m. phone call, not phone call, a message with Latrice Royale. And this quote I love because it came out that Latrice had been to prison before becoming one of the most successful drag queens on earth. And they said, "I want people to realize that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to fall down. Get up. Look sickening and make them eat it." And there's a lot of talk about, you know, the best revenge is your paper, sorry Beyonce, but I think no revenge, you know what I mean? No revenge, because rotten fruit falls from the tree naturally. So when you're wanting to succeed, succeed knowing that you could fail, but work to, I know, have success for yourself, not for anybody else's opinion, just for yourself.
100%. Like keeping it to you, like keeping it for yourself is like the biggest thing, in my opinion, about success after failure, before failure. Like, because when you, even when you succeed for somebody else, I consider it a failure, because you, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's just, it's not for you, and it's still other people's opinions, and you're not really even caring about it. It's not even for that. I, what you said about success never teaches you anything is something that I learned. I learned it so randomly because I worked for this I won't say their name. I worked for this restaurant, and and the owner is a great person. We're actually really cool now. We still talk now. We had our little thing, but he was doing so well, but I just noticed some systems in play were not working. But it was so hard to tell him this, because his response to everything was, "But we're doing great, but we're succeeding." And I realized, I was like, oh, you can't tell somebody who's winning that they are doing anything wrong, nope. because nope. they are not listening. And I kept saying, like, how do I win in life, but also be open-minded enough to know that when someone is telling me something, not out of anything other than trying to help me, I will listen, because I don't ever want to be that person. And I think with failure, it kind of teaches you to not be that person sometimes, because like, you're right. If you succeed in everything that you do right out the gate, what is there to learn? Like, where is there to go? Like, you can't grow, because it's just like, you're just on this plateau of success, which is great in one standpoint. But how do you even measure that you're happy in that success if you don't know what the failure is to have that comparison to know that you are doing good? Like, yeah. in reality, you're just kind of like going through life at a mute point. Like, yeah. You're not trying anything. Like you say, you try. At least I tried. One of my biggest things, I don't want regrets. Like, regrets that I can help, I do not want. Like, I don't have FOMO at all. But what I do is I don't want to have if ands and whats. So I would do things and my ability for me to do, because I'm like, at least I tried. And I want to be able to try it. I want to live. I want to live life as much as I can, because tomorrow's never promised. So,
yeah. And I want to touch base what you were talking about, regret there. I think it was the famous 11-minute astronaut, Katy Perry, that said, no regrets, just love.
And on that note, we got to get back into cooking. We got two more things I wanted to go over. And the next one is actually something that you might cook more of. You're in the you're in Europe, so the UK, or yeah, Scotland. It's still
I'm in UK, Scotland. Guys. Don't let me call me British.
You'll be in Australia very soon. It's fine. This one is pasta, guys. So pasta is notorious, and honestly, I say that about you, but I'm speaking to my American people here, because we're probably the worst people when it comes to cooking pasta. Because one, you overcook it. Overcooking, sticking, and clumping are the three major fails when cooking pasta. And the most common reason why this happens is honestly not enough water. If you are cooking your pasta and you realize, and once again, I'm speaking to my American people, because this might not happen so much in Scotland, but most Americans cook pasta from a box, the dry pasta, which is nothing is wrong with that. But if you're cooking your pasta from a box, and if the end of the cooking process, you notice that your pasta is above your water and your water is gone and you have not depleted any of the water by pouring it out, you, my good sir or ma'am, started with too little water. I know that this is something that is too late, but as me and Grant have talked about, use that knowledge to go forward, because sometimes you will not know until you fail. But not enough water really does give you the sticking and the clumping, because where is your pasta supposed to go? Like, if you can't go to Bella Noche's, where can you go? So for into the pasta has nowhere to go. It's going to stick to each other. It's out of the water. It has the moisture on it now, and it's sticking to the moisture of the next piece of pasta. So you need to make sure you have enough water. The other part is no stirring when you're cooking pasta. And I said this earlier, put your spatulas down. When you put your pasta into the water, when you drop it in, you want to stir. That first stir is to make sure your pasta does not fall to the bottom of your pot, start to stick, and start to stick together. Then your pasta is going to start to cook individually. That's from any other pastas that you make. And this is very, very important if you're making fresh pasta, which probably applies to your area of the world more than this area of the world. Fresh pasta is very important to stir when you first put it in, because it will stick together even faster than your dry pasta. So that first drop and stir is important, and then stop stirring. Because when you continuously stir, any of that excess gluten or flour that's coating that pasta, you can see it inside of that box most of the time. If you're making fresh pasta, you put it on there to keep it from sticking together or drying out. It's going to start to shake off and move around and start to come together. You're basically creating a nice little soup or a little sauce in there that's going to cause your pasta to stick together, which we do not want. So stir, stop stirring, let it cook. The last point of it is cooking too long, which goes to the overcooking. Now, I think this one is something that I feel like we should be better at, because almost every single TV chef does at least 25 episodes of cooking pasta and finishing it in a sauce. Like, I feel like you can tell ChatGPT to bring up every single one of them, and they've all said this. I don't know why we don't listen. But you want to finish your pasta in the sauce. Now, I don't care if that's red sauce, white sauce, just vodka itself. I don't care what you're finishing it in. But the sauce itself is your 10% of cooking time. So you want to cook your pasta to 90% or al dente. And then you want to finish it in the sauce, not in the pasta water. If you finish your pasta all together, when you put it in your sauce or your pan that has your other ingredients, it's going to continue to cook. So, and just the rules of numbers, if you're already at 100% cook time and you continuously cook, you're going to go over 100%, which is now overcooked, guys. So just remember to take it out earlier and then put it into your pan with your sauce and you'll be good. Those are tips for your pasta. And last but not least, all the things we've gone over so far, Grant actually can eat, because if you don't know, Grant is a vegan. But this
No,
not vegan? You're vegetarian.
Oh, just vegetarian. Whoa.
Vegetarian.
Whoa.
Okay. I'm sorry. I said the wrong V word.
I'm sorry if I've just offended vegans there by saying over.
No. I'm sorry.
I take my hat off. I could not be vegan.
I did 2 weeks. So yeah. Here's my trial period.
I did a day. Okay, I did not renew. It was 4 hours of my life.
Yeah, no, I did not renew that. It was bad. But kudos to you guys. So TJ, is TJ vegan?
No.
Vegetarian too? Both of you guys vegetarian? No. Oh, okay. I guess I don't have any vegan friends. I do. Jessica, my superhero. Jessica Kurtek. You're vegan out there. But I call her Captain America, or what is it? Yeah, I forgot the name. Anyway. What's the other superhero? Captain Marvel. I call her Captain Marvel.
Oh, Captain Marvel.
Because she lives on a boat downtown in San Diego. She lives on a boathouse. She drives a motorcycle to work where she's a pilot.
Oh, shit.
Like, right? So she used to work on cruise ships as a future cruise manager, and she used that money to get herself through pilot school, and now she's a pilot. So that's why I call it Captain Marvel. So this last one goes out to everybody but you, Jessica. And this is going to be, and you too, this is meat, but this is chicken. And I like to talk about chicken because, honestly speaking, undercooking or not cooking your steak correctly, even your pork, you'll be okay. Like, you'll be fine, guys. It's not like you won't die. Chicken is chicken. We need to make sure that we are not cooking raw chicken in 2026. Like, it's we're too far advanced. You should not have a full-fledged computer in your pocket that tracks your every movement, but you're still cooking raw chicken. Like, we have to fix it. And I think the most common fail, you see these common things we're going through. This one goes back to the eggs. Too high heat will kill you, because of the fact that the thing about chicken is that we are deceived by our eyes. The chicken will look done and it is not done on the inside. And this happens because you're not using a thermometer. Back to that thermometer again. You know that chicken needs to be a certain temperature. 160 degrees Fahrenheit is what you're going for minimally. And this is where we want to make sure we're at. And you want to make sure that too high heat would give you that amazing looking chicken on the outside very fast, but on the inside, you have not given it time to cook through. And that's the most common fail of cooking chicken, especially frying chicken, because it looks golden brown, like Patti LaBelle herself has blessed you with the chicken. And on the inside, it is uncooked and pink, and you do not want it. So
this is why I'm vegetarian. Honestly, I honestly can't undercook broccoli. I can't undercook Play-Doh. Literally.
Well, please don't.
That's literally a lot of my friends say, like, Grant, you just eat Play-Doh. I can't die from my plant-based meals.
Yeah, and you won't die from chicken. You will feel like you want to die. But It is one of those things where, you just have to be safe, guys. Like, when in doubt,
thermometer.
Y'all be safe. When in doubt, use your thermometer and y'all be safe. Like, literally, guys. Like, it's one of those things where it really boils down to patience and just giving yourself enough time. If you know that the meal that you want to cook, no matter if you're vegan, vegetarian, or eat all the meats, if the meal you want to cook takes 30 minutes and you know that, you can't do it in 10 minutes. I'm sorry. Like, and that's one of the biggest things that happens. We rush it. It's like, I want to do chicken and carbonara and blah, 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 but I have 20 minutes before I have to be back at work. And I'm just, no. There's no shortcuts. If there were shortcuts, trust me, we would have done them by now. There is no shortcuts. Using high heat does not help you get to your desired temperature, whatever, faster. So there's no shortcuts. You have to make sure that you are having patience, doing the right steps, This is just for safety, but these are the four common fails that we went over today as far as food. And we talked about our failures that we've done. And I mean, most of it, honestly, was just like mishaps, not really failures. And to wrap up this episode, Grant, what do you want to lead the people with? Do you have a personal quote yourself? I know you quote everybody else, and you have a Grant quote to leave us with today.
Oh, a quote like from me?
Yeah, like what are you going to give the people?
Oh gosh. That's actually the book that I've been procrastinating because my books, I'm writing a trilogy, and the first one is Lessons from Friends and Family Members. The second one's going to be all about, you know, celebrities and famous people quotes. And the third one is quotes from myself. And I'm like, whoa, what the hell do I even like start? Mm.
You start here on the Cooking Your Way Through Life podcast.
One that I will say that, and it's almost, and again, it's another one with a curse word, and I apologize. When you're feeling low and when you feel like you failed, just remember, it's shit right now, but it's not forever. And that has been translated into many different ways, like this too shall pass, etc. But I remember, and I hope I don't bring the energy down, I'm sorry. But I remember there was a girl that I was speaking to, and she generally wanted to end her life. She really was done. And she's still here, which is fantastic. But I remember sitting with her, and I said, listen, it's shit right now, but it's not forever. This thing you want to do right now... We know the Titanic's going to sink one day. You know what I mean? This thing you want to do, we know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So why not go and find out how Rose meets Jack? Let's find out if the story is by, you know, like find out what the story is before it ends. So I, when you're sitting in that thing, please don't think that this is it. This is, it's done. It's shit right now, but it's not forever.
I like that. I liked it a lot. Well, it's better than what I was going to say, so you're good. I was just going to say, you know, remember, guys, that failure is going to happen to you. And if it hasn't happened to you, it's going to happen. It's pretty much inevitable. It's kind of like your roles in the Titanic story. I always feel like if you have lived your life so long that you have not failed at anything, count your lucky stars, but brace yourself. Because it will happen, and it's not to try to, you know, bring you down to my level or like, it's just, it's a great equalizer. We're none of us are above it. You know, like we're going to, if you try things and kind of like what J.K. Rowling said, if you're living, it's going to happen. And if you're not, then maybe that's the thing. Maybe you haven't
stop being your own barrier for what you want to do. You know what I mean? Like it one day we are going to take our last breath. And that is going to be the biggest damn wake-up call because we realized that we were fighting against ourselves the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
We could have had what we wanted, or we could have at least tried get what we wanted or desired. But we were in our own damn way. And so it's like,
All right, Grant, before we get out of here, tell the people where to find you.
So I have made... all platforms as simple as possible. It's Grant Martin. I am It's Grant Martin on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Now, I do post the same stuff on all platforms, but maybe you prefer one platform to another. So It's Grant Martin. And a lot of my content is mindful comedy. I like to call myself a mindful comic that I want you to think differently, but I also want to make you laugh.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and coming on here and sharing your wisdom with us. Really appreciate you. I really appreciate all the listeners. Guys, remember that you can now check out the Cooking Your Way Through Life TV show on YouTube that comes out on Mondays. Also, two other shorts that come out on YouTube. This is actually now on YouTube in addition to all the other streaming platforms. And you can still order Cooking Your Way Through Life, the cookbook, on Amazon.com as well as BarnesandNoble.com. So, as always, we appreciate you guys, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Cooking Your Way Through Life with Chef Hollywood.